What's up, everybody? This episode of Arc Junkies is sponsored by WeldDevils.com. For welder-inspired merch like t-shirts, hats, and coffee mugs, WeldDevils.com is your one-stop shop. WeldDevils.com, we are devils. From Podcast Detroit Studios in Royal Oak, Michigan, this is Arc Junkies. What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 13 of Arc Junkies. I'm your host, Jimmy McKnight, and I have been preparing all week for this episode. This episode is just jam-packed, and my guests in studio this week are Josh Welton of Brown Dog Welding and Aaron Beefer of Bulldog Welding, all Michigan-based welders. And like I said, this episode really, really is jam-packed. These guys are both heavy hitters in the welding community, and it was just an absolute honor to have both of them in the studio at the same time. I know you guys are going to enjoy this episode. This episode was a lot of fun to actually record. Let's see, what do we got here? I don't really have any announcements this week. I do have an iTunes review that I want to get to. This one is a 5-star. It's entitled Another Positive Testament of the Welding Community, and it reads as such. Production value of this podcast is top-notch. Content is compelling, and the representation of personalities, technology, suppliers, and community is outstanding. Chalk up another win for our vital skilled trades. I love what you do and demand that you do more of it. Promoting welding to our youth only strengthens our ability to manufacture and compete. Thank you so much for that review. Honestly, that was probably one of the most heartfelt reviews I've gotten so far. You know, the emails and the iTunes reviews that I get from you guys, it's really just confirmation that this show is making a difference in the welding community. And that is just so humbling to me, and actually so propelling in keeping this podcast going, because it is making such a difference. And I'm getting emails saying, like, I gotta have this show every week, and I listen to this every Monday, stuff like that. Just, I mean, honestly, it touches my heart, and thank you guys so much for supporting the show and everything that I'm trying to do with Arc Junkies. Let's see, what else do I got? I don't have anything else. I have nothing else. This is a long episode, so I'm going to cut the intro a little bit short. So without further ado, here is Josh Welton and Aaron Beefer.
Let's go into a little bit about what Bulldog Welding does.
Oh, just everything.
Yeah?
People come to my house with trailers, you know, fix this. I do, like, a lot of architectural stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I started off with, like, business card holders and... Just little things, and then it just kind of went from there.
Very cool. And now your actual day job, though, you're a weld engineer.
Correct.
So which came first? Were you a welder that went into weld engineering, or a weld engineer that decided to take welding for the weld engineer class?
I welded before I ever became a welding engineer.
Very cool.
I was in design for 20 years,
mm-hmm.
and then out of necessity, I learned to weld and just kind of stuck. I mean, something about fusing two pieces of metal together.
There's something about that, man. I mean, honestly, it's fusing metal with fire and electricity that kind of makes you get that Tim Allen moment where you're all, absolutely.
I was in love as soon as I did it the first time.
Hell yeah. So now, all right, since you were a welder first before you went into weld engineering, did you find that your theoretical knowledge of welding really helped as far as your education for weld engineering?
Yeah. I mean, I got thrown into the job, honestly.
Yeah.
There was an opening. They asked me to do it. I just got into it, and I mean, from there it just went.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we do laser welding, for like seat structures and stuff. So
mm-hmm.
it's a totally different ball game than anything I do at home.
Oh, absolutely. Because you have to actually go into like the process, and you have to write out the WPSs and figure out the parameters for certain things. I mean, am I correct?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. So now when you go through that, like, are you running D11, D1.2? Are you doing 1104? Like what kind of book do you go off of to write your processes?
We have our own.
It's one of them. Gotcha. So gotcha. Yeah.
We have to go through all these, like, it's an ISO spec for, like, cut, etch, and polish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the same thing that everybody does, but it's kind of tweaked a little bit for our company.
Right on. you get to go do that, and then you come home and you have Bulldog Welding. What are some of the what are some of the best projects that you've done out of Bulldog Welding that at least are most notable to you?
Maybe the railings at Northern Oak Brewery. That was up in Holly. I did those railings 2 years ago, probably.
Mm-hmm. When they, you know, you really contributed to society with that.
Now
you help drunks get to their car safely.
They're all interior railings, so. But there, it was cool. It was a fun job. I just got to do whatever I wanted to with them, and they turned out pretty good. Aside from that, like architectural stuff, I do like fireplace surrounds.
Mm-hmm. So where was the point in your life where you were like, I kind of want to start my own thing? Like you're working for a company, you're a weld engineer, you've hit the top of the academics that you can in welding. Now you've started your own thing. What was the inspiration behind that?
It was just getting out in the garage and working.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, people would ask me for stuff. And Instagram, I mean, that was
a beautiful place
thing. I never would have been half the place I am now without Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Met up with the Mishler brothers. You know, they're great guys to learn from. They've taught me a lot. And they, you know, they showed me kind of more into Instagram than what I ever thought.
Mm-hmm.
And then people would message me for things, you know, hey, can you do this? Can you do that? CNC plasma table, one of the best things I ever bought. I'm always, you know, people always come to me for signs.
Oh, yeah, that's a huge market right there.
I put a little twist on them, and I've got some patinas and stuff that I've messed with. And you have to do a couple little, like, welds on them, put it like bottle openers, like big wall mount bottle openers.
Yeah.
With their name on them. And it's fun.
It's all the personal touch stuff.
Yeah, I like doing that stuff. It's just a little creative.
Well, that's the fun part, though, because I've talked to a lot of guys who are like, you know, they started their own thing, especially now with like the you know, like you said, Instagram and YouTube and everything's so big for people. You know, they're out in their garage and they're like, they want to kind of give people that bird's eye view into what they're doing. So for a lot of content creators, they're like, well, a lot of them, their business started because they just started putting themselves out on YouTube or Instagram, and it went from there. Either people asking them questions on how they do this, and then the business just goes. You know, I talked to quite a few people at FabTech this year who were like, I get 90% of my business strictly from Instagram and the community that's on there.
Yeah, Instagram's been number one for me.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I did, which took the longest time of anything, is getting your name on Apple Maps.
Oh yeah,
you know, and Google and stuff. I mean, that people Google your
search search engine optimization and all that. Yep.
Yeah, you have to jump through hoops with Apple to get them to put on.
Oh, dude, they're the biggest hoop holders. Yeah. Absolutely. So now, what kind of equipment are you working with at Bulldog? I mean, are you a full fledged, ready to go MIG, TIG, laser CNC, everything?
I've got a Dynasty 200DX for mm-hmm. my TIG welder. A Miller 252, which I could thank Jason Mosier for that one, because that's a beast of a machine.
Hell yeah.
The Hypertherm plasma cutter on a Arclight dynamics table. RoboVent fume extractor.
Uh-huh.
I got all Walter products for abrasives. I mean, I'm set up pretty good.
Very cool.
I couldn't ask for better companies.
And now you kind of have a little thing going on with RoboVent with the fume extractors. Now, we were talking about that a little bit earlier. As far as fume extractors go, I mean, what I saw at FabTech that RoboVent really brings to the table, it's very good fume extraction, but it's also, it's at that point where it's not super, super expensive either. You know, like, it's pricey. Yes,
it's pricey,
but it's not out of the ballpark for, say, a guy like you who has a shop to not have something like that in their shop.
I don't know if you remember, a long time ago there was a Black Booger Society on Instagram. You know, I think when I got my fume extractor, I think I posted something like, no longer a part of that club.
Yeah.
I mean, it's night and day difference.
Oh,
I mean,
you're right, dude.
You don't have the Black Boogers near as much. I wouldn't weld without one.
Dude, I got that when I got my first job that was TIG welding, like, all day. It was TIG welding. And I went from MIG from 7 years into actual a TIG welding job. And I'm like, when I went home and took my shower, I'm not blowing Black Boogers out anymore. I'm like, how cool is this?
Yeah.
So now, what would be something that that you have coming down the pipeline now that you're working on that you can kind of talk about?
I'm working on a – it looks like a – range hood for a stove, but it's a cover for a fish tank in some somebody's house.
Okay.
It's in their kitchen. It's going above that. So it's cool. It's a little out of my comfort zone, but I'm getting through it. I put some skins on it yesterday. So it's
When you go into your own content creation now for Bulldog Welding, and because I find that a lot of people, like, they're getting into the Instagram thing, they're just now finding out about it, and they're really figuring out how to use it, because there is a right way and a wrong way to promote yourself on this social media platform. And for welders who are really kind of figuring this out right now, what are some of the techniques that you put in play for Bulldog Welding on social media platform to kind of draw attention to yourself and bring more business?
I don't know. I'm probably the worst person to ask about it. I just take pictures and post them. I don't, I mean, I hardly ever put filters on them. And if I do, it's just subtle. I'm trying to start getting into video now because I think that's that's where it's going.
It really is, man. It really is. What was the some study just went out about how video posts get 10 times more interaction than actual posts just because it's something to watch versus just a post of something. With Bulldog Welding now, like, where, I mean, I know we kind of talked about the inspiration to get it started, but like, where did you get the name Bulldog Welding? Because, I mean, you're branded everywhere. You're here with your shirt, your Bulldog Welding shirt. You were going to bring some swag. You were throwing around breast cancer awareness Bulldog stickers at FabTech. So where did all that kind of come from?
I have a English Bulldog, Owen. That's pretty much where it came from.
He's the mascot for you.
Yeah, probably. He's 7 years old, and pretty much right after I got him, I changed my name from a stupid name, AB. I was AB Weld. There was a kind of a pun on the JB Weld. And I switched it over to Bulldog, and it just went from there. And I mean, I got a cool logo, and just ran with it.
Hell yeah, man. Well, it works. It definitely works. I mean, people are attracted to it. You're definitely growing and following, and you're becoming more or less, you know, I hate the term industry influencer. I don't think there's any more of a airhead filled compliment in the world than naming yourself an industry influencer. But you are sort of becoming that. You know, people are looking at you now as as one of these people that if you're putting something out there, they're going to look into it because Bulldog Welding said that this is something decent. So how do you sort of deal with the people that are coming to you asking you questions, like with your answers? Do you kind of, I mean, you got to make sure that your answers are 100% correct because now your name is going on these, correct?
I just speak to what I have. I don't get into technical things about RoboVent.
Yeah.
All I know is that it works.
It works.
And I mean, if I don't get into anything else, I can't tell them anything wrong. I mean, if I tell you my honest opinion about something, that's all I have to go on.
Dude, it's your name though. It's your brand. I mean, you got to give the honest opinion. You're not gonna tell somebody something's good when it's not.
Nope.
Too many people are though right now.
Oh my God, yeah, just to get their name out there.
And not even just their name, just to get free stuff. it's brutal. Like,
I can imagine. No, you're good. You're good. That's all good. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I take the same kind of approach. Like, I had a lot of welding companies approach me, but I held off for Miller because that's what I used.
You know, exactly.
Weiler.
You're good.
Weiler was the same thing. It's like they, I use their stuff, and then they approached me. It's like, yeah, your stuff is cool. I'll use it. You know, I'm not going. But at FabTech and at CME, you got all these people going up. Hey, I'll use your stuff if you give me this, if you give me that.
And it's
like, hey, like you said, it's your name. Your name means more than getting free stuff from a giant company or whatever, you know.
I get called a brand whore once in a while. I mean, that's, you know, and then with the Walter stuff. Yeah. I mean, I'm nothing but Walter.
Yeah.
I've got a drawer full of old flap discs that I don't even use, and they just sit there. I'll never pull them out.
Right.
I use Walter for everything. They're just a great disc. I mean, I get three times the use out of everything. It's I'm going to stand by them because they work.
Yeah. Well, hey, dude, if it's a good company, absolutely. So where did you kind of when did you find the arc? How long ago did you start welding?
Oh, geez, it's been 15 years. It was out of necessity.
Yeah.
It's, I was building up my first car, my 74 Nova, when I was 16, my parents bought it. And it was I've rebuilt it from the ground up, basically. Mm-hmm. And I had to put a core support in with a trans cooler, and I could have bolted it together, but I wanted to weld it. I borrowed some guy from work's old Lincoln buzz box and just sat out in the garage with sticks, just running through
sticks. Figuring it out. So you're self-taught then, completely?
Oh, yeah, fully.
Right on. Yep. Now, did you notice in the time that you were actually welding, before you became a welding engineer, that you're the guys that went to actual trade school that you came out with or that you met with on the job, did you find that you being self-taught, meeting up with people that actually went to trade school, did you find that they were maybe ahead of you in some ways or behind you in some ways? I mean, how did those interactions work once you actually got to the job?
I just stick things together, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I learned to do is, you know, just in my – if it passed the hammer test, I was good.
Uh-huh. if it sticks, I'm good.
But now that I'm into the industry a little bit more, I understand a little bit more of the fundamentals and everything. I think it's helped my career and it's helped my Bulldog Welding business.
I mean,
things are a lot better than they were. I look at that weld on that Nova that I got, and it's I want to grind it down and redo it. It's horrible.
Well, the reason I ask is because in my own experience, you know, I'm completely self-taught on the job, learned everything on the job, and I noticed that, you know, guys that I met that went to trade school, you know, when they got on the job, it just seemed like their knowledge was so far from mine, and they knew a little bit about every process, where I was kind of kept in this bubble of I know this process or I know this process and that's it. But you'd meet these guys that would come in with almost like this holy grail knowledge of trade school, and that's kind of why I like try to tell people, like, yes, you can learn on the job. There is the way to break into this industry on the job, but if you go to trade school, it's that much more information that you're getting, and that you make yourself that much more valuable once you actually get out.
Oh yeah, and as far as welding goes, I'm no welder.
Mm-hmm.
I look at all these other people's welds, and I mean,
oh, if you're comparing to the guys on it, come on, I mean, none of us are.
Yeah, but I was scared of my TIG welder. I had a TIG welder for 10 years, and
yeah.
I used it maybe 5 times. I hated it. I didn't know how to do it, and that's why I hated it. But when, you know, you meet up with some decent people, and, you know, Wes and Nick Mishler, I mean, I brought them up before. They taught me so much about TIG welding. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I just bought a MIG welder because it's easier now. But as far as, like, love of the process, I guess, if you want to say anything else, it's TIG welding.
TIG. Yeah, now, yeah. Is it TIG aluminum or TIG steel, stainless steel? Anything,
yeah.
TIG.
I actually, just to do it, I bought a pound of titanium filler like about a year ago. I still have 99% yep. of it left, you know, but I just to do it, I had some scrap and just, I mean, it's fun. Now I can say I did it.
Yeah.
And I'll probably never use it, but.
Somebody asked me one time what kind of rod you use for titanium, and I said the expensive kind.
I think that was $100 experience for me.
Yeah.
So switching things over now to Brown Dog Welding, Josh.
Hello. Hello, how are you?
Excellent, how are you?
Fantastic. Thank you again for coming.
Yeah,
and let's kind of get into your history with welding. I know we were talking outside before we came in here. You spent some time overseas. You do sculpture welding, and you also do teaching and write for The Fabricator. Is that correct?
Yeah, and then the Practical Welding Today just got rebranded as The Welder, and I'm writing a column for that every month.
Right. Very cool.
Every issue, it's every other month, called Playing with Fire. I got started, I was the kid that was going to go to school for 4 years and become a, I didn't know what I was going to become, architect, psychologist. Like, I went to school for Christian studies and psychology,
mm-hmm.
and dropped out. I hated school. I hated going to class. But I found my wife at college, and her dad was a millwright instructor for Chrysler. So I got in, and I struck my first arc at school at the training center. They had us go up to – before we could go on the plant, we had to do a 5-week thing at the training center. And just to make sure that, you know, we were not going to go in there and kill ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they did the safety and kind of the basics of everything. And one of the guys snuck us out back to use a trailblazer and strike an arc. And I, you know, had some 6010 rod, and I was running the bead, and I was like, this is effing awesome. And I looked down, and my pants were on fire. Like, I literally set myself on fire.
We've all been there, brother.
Literally set myself on fire the first time I ran a bead, and I was hooked. Like, I just loved it. So the whole millwright thing was cool. I loved the experience. I loved, you know, running cranes and moving heavy machinery down. And,
mm-hmm.
But the welding was the part that I really gravitated to. And I had a handful of guys that were just – they were very experienced. They were very willing to give me their time and their knowledge. So it kind of accelerated my learning curve. Like I had guys – one guy that had done structural welding for 30 years. Another guy had done tool room steel welding for 20 years. Another guy had done basically tear down torch stuff forever. So I had all these guys that were experts and extremely experienced in all these different fields. And they were all giving me little bits and pieces of their knowledge. And we talked earlier about formal education or trade school. I'm a huge proponent of it because you just don't know what you don't know. I still get I'm shocked at the comments I get about people look at a weld and be like, oh, you didn't do that. A robot did that. I've been doing this for 40 years. It's like, yeah, you've been doing one weld for 40 years.
In a bubble.
Exactly. Yep. They live in a bubble. And that's the biggest thing with social media, I think, is it's knocked that bubble down. Like there was guys – a guy started welding November – 2002 is November 11th. It was the same day my dog, Woodson, who is the brown dog, mm-hmm. who passed away recently.
Oh, sorry.
But thanks. He was born the same day. We found out later. We adopted him. He was a rescue dog. We found out later. He was born on the same day I started welding, which is kind of crazy. So before social media, you had these forums, and that was the way, the internet forums, the message boards, that was the way you got out information. And there was just a couple of guys that were taking photos of their work and kind of sharing, and they were kind of the people kind of revered them. There was one guy named Engloyd. I have no idea who he is, but he was a pipe welder that always posted these insane pictures that now are commonplace. Mm-hmm. But then it was like it was this one guy posting these pictures, and it was the start of the bubble getting burst. But now with Instagram, it's widespread. Like when I first started posting on Flickr in 2003, 2004, people I got all the time, you didn't do that. That's fake. A robot did that. A machine did that. Now everyone's doing that kind of work, and it's iron sharpens iron. I don't think everyone was doing that kind of work. I think they saw it and they're like, let me give that a shot. And all of a sudden you've got people that are, I had an instructor at Macomb, John Kaser. He's a good friend of mine. Awesome. He was the first guy. I saw him weld, and he was gas welding. And I know this isn't on video, but he had like one arm way out on one side, one arm way out on the other side. Like not the way you do it. You want to tuck your arms in. I'm shaky as heck. Yeah. This guy was like a robot. And I was like, I got to be steady like that guy. I'm never going to be able to weld.
Yeah.
But you find your way. You figure out, how to compensate for I have double vision and I have shaky hands. You figure out how to deal with it and how to make it work for you. But he one time told me, he's like, every good welder has a little bit of cockiness in them. Mm-hmm. Like we like to play the humility game and be like, I'm not that good.
No, but when you do that well and you lift up your hood, you're like,
yeah,
fuck yeah.
Yeah, I'm the shit. Yeah. I know what the fuck I'm doing.
Yes.
And there's if you can cash that check, then there's – I don't want something going out with my name on it that's not perfect. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the things that drives me even more than seeing somebody else's work is I don't want to look at my work and be like, I could have done that better.
Yeah.
So it could be – it's just – ego really drives a lot of it, and it's not a bad thing. I think people look at it as a bad thing. They look at, this is America. Everything's based on hard work. Well, hard work will get you your ceiling, but everyone has a different ceiling.
Absolutely.
And talent has a lot to do with it, and I don't think that we should shy away from that. I think that we should embrace it.
I agree. I think a little bit of ego is healthy,
yes,
honestly,
absolutely.
Because it keeps you confident in what you're doing. You're like, no, I know that I can do this, and I know I'm better than this person at this.
I always like to compare welders to athletes or world-class musicians. Like, you have to have that mentality that you're the best. Mm-hmm. You're going to get it done, and nobody's going to outwork you. Nobody's going to out-hustle you. But you've got that other thing that other person doesn't have, and they're never going to reach you. But you got to make sure of that. So you really got to – you got to lay it down, and you got to, bust your butt to maintain that. You got baseball. I'm a huge baseball fan, and Miguel Cabrera, who didn't have a great year last year, but he's been one of the best hitters on the planet for a decade. He still takes batting practice every day.
Mm-hmm.
He's still in the batting cages before every game. Cy Young winners are throwing pitches on their off days. They're throwing simulated games. They're NBA players are shooting 1,000 shots a day, and yet welders somehow think that I got a big job. I'm going to chill out for a while, and then I'll get to it tomorrow. I'm welding on my breaks. I'm welding at lunch. I'm welding before work, after work. And that's how Brown Dog Welding started, was that Chrysler, as a millwright, as a skilled tradesperson, we had to be ready for when production went down. So we couldn't be on another job. You know, people look at us and be like, ah, what, you're not doing anything. It's like, yeah, we have to be ready because when production goes down, that's costing this company thousands of dollars per second. Mm-hmm. So we have to be on it. So I would spend my time at the weld table welding, and pretty soon you start putting stuff together and then you start making things. And that's how the sculpture part of it started. But that was also I haven't lost that, like, I just want to go weld all the time, whether it's TIG, STIG, MIG, whatever. And you were talking about the trade schools, and that's absolutely true. Like, you get experience. Like, we started with gas welding, then we moved to stick welding, and then we did TIG, and then we did MIG.
And, yeah, stuff you would never get a chance to do stuff
right,
in your bubble.
Right.
That's
if
the job you're hired for.
If you're a kid, you know, and there's nothing wrong with it, but you watch YouTube, you learn a couple of things, and you get a job as a production welder, and mm-hmm. you do that for 5 years, there's – you don't know what you don't know. And if you've never done a certification before and yet you're looking at, like, look at this stuff that I did. It's awesome. Well, go try to do something to a WPS.
Yeah.
Go try to do something to a certification. And shit, you might get it. You'll probably get it if you have that kind of attitude. But you don't – I remember the first time I was an apprentice and I was still getting to the point – I was just learning to read the bubble – or read the puddle. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And we're talking about bubbles. It's
yeah, yeah,
bubbles,
yeah.
Puddles, same.
No, it's you know, my journeyman, Chris Bianco, who is the guy who really took me under his wings when I got to Chrysler, he used to always say, be the puddle grasshopper.
And yes.
Once you could see that, once you realized what was happening, you could manipulate it and you can make it do whatever
it's
you want.
It's all puddle manipulation, 100%.
But when I first started, when I was stick welding, I couldn't read the puddle. I didn't know exactly. We were doing vertical up stuff and I was not staying on the edges long enough.
Yeah.
And Tom Soley, who passed away recently, he's another guy at the tech center. He worked for a company called Weldtech, and then they got hired in to do a lot of the training for Chrysler. Another 40 years as a boilermaker, you know, just had done everything, boilermaker. Mm-hmm. He was an artist too, TIG. He could walk by and you're struggling with somebody. There was one time I was struggling. It was another instructor that was with me. We were trying to figure this out. And he just walks by and he's like, you have the polarity switch. Like, what? And we look over and like, ah, God damn it. Like, literally, we were just in this, like, you know, struggling for 15 minutes. And
right.
He's just
like,
walking by
going
and just listening to it. And he's like, yeah, you got that screwed up. And we're like, God damn it. Flip it and everything's good. But he was – so I was stick welding and I was struggling with holding the edge. And he said, just count. You get to the edge, just count to three.
Yep.
Get to the other edge, count to three. And his analogy was, you know, you're driving down a back road. It's you and two buddies driving a pickup truck and you're passing a bottle of Jack Daniels back and forth. He goes, who gets the drunkest? It's the guy in the middle because
yep.
he's getting it at one
every single time. Yeah.
So he's like –
passer's feet.
He goes, you got to go through the middle fast. So when you're welding, you got to go through the middle fast and hold the edges. And
yep.
so I started doing that and it was getting better. But, you know, with stick, he's like, you got to get the – we weren't allowed to do any mechanical cleaning. We had to use a wire brush
right.
and a pick.
Yep.
There was no grinding. There was no – wire wheel on a 4.5-inch or 6-inch grinder. It was all by hand. And that was so you looked at what you were doing. You really got into what you were doing as opposed to just, you know, putting your shield on and you know, going at it. So I remember the first vertical up test that I did, and he's like, you can't burn out the flux. You can't burn out the silica. You've got to clean that out. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. You know, I got to clean enough. And it went in that hydraulic press and it snapped. And it was, you could see the little, it didn't snap, but you could see all the little impurities. And it was all where those inclusions were.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's never happening again. I've done quite a few certs, but it's not like I'm certifying every week. But that was the last cert that I failed.
Right.
Because I was just not taking that chance. It's cleanliness is godliness, and you cannot take that too far. You cannot be too careful with
that.
Not
at all.
And with stick welding, especially once, you know, you start reading the puddle and you start holding the edges, you're not getting those inclusions anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But you gotta clean stuff. And I see these guys that, you know, they brush it off quick and they do the next pass. And it's like, man, if you've never done a cert, you don't know. You think it's good enough.
I worked for companies that did military work that wouldn't take off the mill scale.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, oh, we'll just skip that part. It takes too long.
No.
Like, you can't skip that part.
I've seen instructors that taught like that. Like, you know, when you get to this for the real deal, you know, you'll clean it off. It's like, no, you practice how you're going to do it.
Yes.
Because the puddle reacts differently. So you've got mill scale and all of a sudden you've got to take more heat to lay the bead down. Then you're getting undercut. Then you're getting inclusions. Mm-hmm. Then your tungsten's balling up. Or if you're MIG, you know, your tip's getting dirty. It affects everything. So you have to practice the right way if you want to do it the right way down the road. So like your muscle memory is going to be different because you're welding differently if you're fighting mill scale, if you're fighting that coating. Yeah, that's crazy. It's crazy that companies can get away with it. We deal with a lot.
Oh, they didn't. It got shut down.
Yeah, and it happens. So a lot of times the game they'll play is, oh, you have to have guys that are certified in this. They'll get one guy, and he'll be certified.
And everybody will be under his cert.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And all of a sudden we're fixing everything because our QA is so critical.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking at these parts that they outsource because these other companies were cheaper. Well, why the hell do you think they were cheaper? It's because they were cutting corners. And a lot of corners were corners that you just can't cut. I actually think you always hear that, and this is kind of going – my mind goes.
No, go ahead. Yeah, we're banter, man.
That, you know, you got to, you know, you can't cut corners. If you know what you're doing, you can actually. Like there was when I hired into General Dynamics, I had never done anything to like GD and T tolerancing. Like all of a sudden I went from, you know, within an eighth inch is good for a millwright to you're doing stuff within a half a mil and, you know, pretty critical stuff. So I was very intimidated when I got back to the weld shop. And I was looking at this dude and he was building this part. And he looked very meticulous, and he was taking his time and doing step one, step two, step three, like going through everything and going over it again. And I thought, man, this guy's got it going on. Like he knows what's up. And they're like, yeah, he's been working on that part for 3 weeks. And I get put on second shift, and they give me that same blueprint. I've got to work on that same part. I'm like, shit.
Mm-hmm.
So I started looking at it, and I look it over. I put it together. It's the end of an 8-hour shift and I've got it done. And I'm like, either I missed something or, you know, I'm either an idiot or a genius. Like, mm-hmm. What's going on? So I let it set. I came in the next day and looked at it and I'm like, all right, I took it down to quality and inspection and they passed it. And so I started looking at this guy's work and he didn't understand the process. So he couldn't skip any little detail mm-hmm. because he didn't understand what it meant. Like, I'm not sure how to best put it, but like, damn it.
Don't worry about it.
You cut something and you need to have it be a square edge, mm-hmm. but you can do that part of it later in the process. Like you don't, if you're putting something together, you're like, all right, I can bend this, but then I can mold it to the piece that I'm putting it together with right. and it'll fit as opposed to spending an extra 3 hours to get that perfect bend.
Exactly.
You can put that on
the piece. You can manipulate the process
absolutely,
of the build.
Yeah. Absolutely. But if you don't understand that that's what's happening, you can't do that.
Right.
And so there's a part you get to a level where you can think three steps ahead or like we were talking about Jamie Jordan earlier introducing us. And there's certain guys that have a sixth sense for things. Like he's one of those guys where I look at what he does and I don't understand it. I don't know how he does it. I have a friend Ed Tilrock, who does pencil renderings, and I look at it and I don't get it. Like he sees stuff that I don't see. He sees stuff that other people don't see. There's certain athletes where, you know, Miguel Cabrera, when he's going, the ball looks like a softball. Like he just hits it to all fields, can do whatever he wants with it. It's just he sees things differently than everyone else sees it. And there's certain people, I think, with metal that they understand how to manipulate it.
Yeah.
They understand, like, you can look at a piece that's sort of warped a little bit and you can go and you can hit it on a four-corner press a few places and you got it straight again.
Mm-hmm.
There's no directions telling you how to do that. And that was we have a press break and I'd never used one before and I got put on some bending jobs. And one of the guys that I worked with, Marlon, he's like, just work with me for a Saturday and we'll get this done. So I go over there and I'm watching him. Then he has me start doing it. I realize that whereas other guys were using a lot of math to figure out stuff, he was eyeballing everything. I'm like, I can mm-hmm. eyeball with the best of them. So once you realize that and you can kind of – yeah, exactly. Exactly. You put your finger up in the wind and it's like, okay, the wind's blowing that direction. I hit it right here and it's going to bounce back this much. And when you're dealing with different materials, you know, whether it's – we do a lot of armor, high hard, and it's got a memory. So you've got to really figure out two or three steps ahead what you're going to do to make that do what you want it to do, to, you know, bend it to your will mm-hmm. as it would be, I guess.
Before we take a break, I want to touch a little bit on what you said earlier about the learning curve with welding
yeah.
and the academics.
Yeah.
I find, and Aaron, please chip in on this too, I find that, you know, I wasn't exactly a straight-A student in school ever as far as the academics. I always – it seemed to just be something that was very cloudy to me.
Yeah.
But once I got into welding, you know, like how you said, some people are just drawn to that puddle manipulation. They understand the way that the metal flows. Some people just have that. I feel like I was one of those people.
Yeah.
And then once I got into that, I noticed that the learning curve that I had in the academic side went away. Because now I'm going into something that I totally love. Everything I'm learning just it seemed to click. And I'm memorizing the code book now. I know codes off the top of my head. And these are things that, you know, you're doing math that you would have never been able to do.
Being good at something also gives you confidence.
Yeah, well, yeah, it does.
Like, it's
because now you're finding these things and you're like, whoa, I feel like a superhuman now. Look
exactly
what I can do.
And people talk about being stubborn and they're like, I'm going to get this no matter what. I wasn't like that. Like, yeah. I wasn't going to beat my head against the wall. If I wasn't good at something, I just didn't do it. You know,
yeah.
Like, TIG welding, it was like you can usually tell within 2 weeks whether somebody really has it or not. That's been my experience with teaching and with watching other people. And the guys that I worked with were like, yeah, you've got it. And that gave me that confidence to, okay, there's a higher ceiling. I can push this. And now if I have a wall – early on, the walls came very quickly, and it took a while to climb them.
Oh,
now
yeah.
You just punch through them, and they still come, but they're farther apart.
Yep.
And now you have the confidence in the background to, you know, I will bump my head against the wall until I get this. I'm dealing with that with some aluminum right now. I do a lot of TIG aluminum, but there are certain things that I still fight with, and I want to understand it. And the only way to understand it is to keep doing it. And so I'm kind of at that point where I'm butting my head against the wall, but. I've broken through those so many times now that I have confidence that I'm –
Then you're working through it.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. There we go. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, all three of us are going to geek out about our week-long FabTech experience. All right. And we are back. FabTech 2017 happened to happen earlier this month, and this is where I actually got to meet you, Aaron. I saw you briefly for a second, but I wasn't able to introduce myself. And I talked a little bit about it last week, but I don't think I was able to really do it justice because I was still so overwhelmed by all of the stuff that I actually saw. And with you guys here, I kind of want to talk to you about it and get what your insights were on some of the highlights of FabTech for you. Aaron, let's start with you.
I mean, the camaraderie, everybody that's there. I mean, you saw it. I mean, it's an Instagram community reunion.
Yeah, it basically. Is really, yeah.
Nobody
knows who each other looks like. It was all like, oh, you're so-and-so on Instagram. Oh, yeah, how you doing?
Or somebody will introduce you with their name and you'd be like, who are you?
That happened to me with Kane Kid. We were walking around and I was just talking to this guy. I'm like, oh, this guy's cool, you know what? And I'm like, what's your name? He's like, Rush. I'm like, oh, cool. What's your name on Instagram? He's like, Kane Kid. I'm like, no shit. I know exactly who you are. Pleasure to meet you.
Yep.
Yeah. So what were some of the things that like really stuck out to you at FabTech Expo this year?
The first thing that stuck out to me is right when you walked in the front door, they got that bucket arm for some sort of piece of equipment. I don't even know what it is, but it was all MIG welded like a 3D printer. I thought that was – I mean, then OTC was doing a booth with a 3D printing thing. That was
sweet,
cool.
Man. It was all 3D printing welding. Like they had that giant – it was a giant it almost looked like a vase, and it was just a consistent run aluminum weld bead that was just 3D printed, and the fact that it didn't get too hot, it didn't fall, it did nothing, it stacked perfectly on each other the entire way. Dude, me and Scott Robbie were at that booth, and like, oh my God, looking at this thing. Like, I'm like, how does that kind of stuff even work? And the guy's like, well, one of our Asian buddies can tell you. He's like, I don't know how to program that.
The game is changing.
Oh, big time.
With 3D printing, when rapid prototyping, like everything's different now.
Dude, I saw today a girl that is a pastry chef. She was an architect turned pastry chef that uses 3D printing and CNC machines to make these desserts that look like just crazy architectural sculptures. You know, and so the fact that
you can eat them?
Yes, and
I'm
can eat them. The fact that you can take it and go from welding to pastries to everything. I mean, the additive manufacturing industry is absolutely changing everything.
I was blown away last year. I was in London or Bristol in England, and the Bloodhound SSC. I know I'm getting away from pet.
No, it's all cool.
They're building this 1,000-mile-an-hour land speed record car, and a lot of it, there was 3D printed. The steering wheel was 3D printed titanium.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the exhaust and ports, intake ports, exhaust ports were 3D printed carbon fiber. It's like, how the fuck do you even do that?
Right.
Like, it boggles my mind, you know. And now you're seeing, I was at Jay Leno's garage, and he's got like a handful of just 3D printers because he's got all his batshit crazy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That you can't get parts for.
Yeah, he's got to custom
and
make
it takes,
them.
Yeah. And, you know, you can have a guy CNC and, you know, do all the measurements, or you can scan it and have it printed out in like 2 minutes.
Yep.
You know, I'm all about the old school, you know, do it by hand. But, man, there's I was talking to a friend of mine who is Mark Trussell. He's the head of design for Dodge SRT, and they still do stuff with clay. And I was like, how is 3D printing changing things? Mm-hmm. And they still use the old school methods, but then they use the new school and kind of add it in. So if they want to add a fin quick, they can just print one out and add it to the 3D sculpture that they've already done, or the clay sculpture they've already done, and then they can manipulate it like that. So it's pretty cool when you can mix the traditional and the new.
Right.
And it's I mean, the sky's the limit. Like,
dude, you're right. And speaking of mind blowing and kind of pulling it back to FabTech, I was talking to you about Aaron. I was talking to you about it a little bit earlier. I walked by the Fronius booth, and they actually had a sample of stainless steel and aluminum that were welded together. That blew my mind. And when I talked to the guy, he was a CWI who was, you know, kind of explaining everything. And I'm like, is this like some sort of globular transfer on how you're doing this? And he's like, it's kind of like that. And he didn't seem like he really wanted to get into the specifics. And I understand why.
It's proprietary.
I mean, damn, dude, what you're doing is like industry changing. Really, it is. And I looked up how that's actually possible. And the only place I actually found something that really had some information was on the ESOP site on how you can actually weld stainless steel to aluminum. And it had to, I can't remember exactly how it was, but it had to do with like being able to keep certain elements in check, basically. Like you had to pull certain elements out and you had to be able to contain certain elements.
Metal's like chemistry. Metal's like, it's one metal is made up of a lot of different things. So if you can pull out the thing that's compatible with that other thing.
Right, you got to find the compatible filler. Yeah. Exactly.
They've been doing it in the auto industry for a decade.
Like, it's just crazy though.
Not to the scale they're doing now, but it's becoming more and more like accessible, I guess would be the right word.
So what were some of the things when you were walking around FabTech that really kind of stuck out to you or people that you met?
I'm not going to lie. I got to get used to that whole I'm awkward with big social situations.
Yeah.
Like, we went to that meet and greet, and I was there with my wife, and we had just driven for Vegas, so I was exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
And and everyone's awesome. Like, everyone's so nice and so down to earth. And I think I came across as like, don't talk to me guy, but I was just like out of it. I love that there was it Salvagini? I'm hoping I'm saying their name right. They do press brakes.
Mm-hmm.
And they were building like freaking stainless steel trash cans that were awesome. They were like, 3 feet or four, you know, 2 or 3 feet tall by a foot deep, and they're bending them up. And I was like, I went up to the guy, I'm like, can I buy one of those? Because that's awesome. He's like, we're giving them away. I'm like, what?
How?
Yeah. So they're bending up these, like, they're like 40 pounds, and they had a mailbox one, they had a couple different ones. So I grabbed the mailbox one, and my friend Vicky Bell, she's the editor for The Fabricator. She's like, you can go set it up in the media room. I'm like, thanks. I don't have to carry this around. That was the other thing, is they had to have bags that you could carry. Like, there are pretty structurally sound bags to carry that stuff around. And so I came back. I had left Tuesday, and I wrote on Facebook. I was like, hey, if anybody can get me that trash can one. Like, so she went and got – she's like, you got the last one they bent up, and she FedExed it to me. And I got it the
next
day.
Very cool.
But it was like, it's all bent. There's no welding. And it just fascinated me. There's this young kid like just putting the metal in, and it's all programmed, and it just bends it out, and there you go. There's this crazy origami, you know.
Yeah.
No,
dude, you're right.
Metal.
Some of the stuff I saw there, like it was absolutely phenomenal and mind-blowing, really.
It's crazy how quick, like the CNC, the laser, plasma, water, like all that stuff has gotten so
advanced,
so much more refined, so advanced, so accessible to like – where, you know, 10 years ago, guys, it had like one guy shops that they weren't having that.
Yep.
They weren't getting that. Now it's like you go in there.
It's almost and, industry standard.
Yeah.
Now,
you got one in your garage. You have to have one in your garage.
Yep.
Like, it's, I think that maybe next year they could do something other than bottle openers, because I think I've got probably 20 different bottle openers.
Yeah.
But it's pretty, I don't know. I just like being around that atmosphere. Right?
Yeah.
And that's my, I went to Atlanta, I was in Chicago, and then I was in this one in Chicago, and just wandering around and taking it all in. I'm a factory rat. I've been in a factory since I was 18,
yep.
And just the sound of the machines and the
– it's home, man.
Smell
it is,
you smell the argon and the metal, and
yep.
I don't have to see anything crazy advanced. I just like being around it.
Yep.
You know? I don't know.
Sunday night, when I first got there, I was invited by Piranha to a kind of like a – were you there? Were you there?
I was
that?
Invited. I didn't get there in time.
Okay. It was a little demonstration of the stuff they had, and they made us a bunch of bottle openers,
yeah,
and they made us
one.
A bunch of other stuff. And just seeing, you know, how fast the fiber labors have gotten from when they first started till now, and then the water jets with – rotating tables. I mean, how you can like that fiber laser has that, they went into the laser, it cut everything, and there was a table on the outside. That table would lift up, come out. The other table will go underneath it, go in with all loaded parts, and just keep
the
continuing.
Fact that they
that
put it in that
amazing.
Building.
That
like,
was the
oh my
temporary.
God,
the fastest fiber laser, 12 kilowatt laser, whatever that.
That's the thing I've ever seen,
one.
Dude. It was just
they
done.
Had they had to slow it down for that. They said they couldn't bolt it to the floor because it was going to cost them X amount of money. So that actually was slower than what it can actually.
Wow.
The fact that they can put all that crap in there, and I say that in a very endearing.
Yeah. No, you're right, dude. It is.
Like,
there's a lot of
they just
in
basically
there.
Set up like 100 mini factories tons. In the McCormick Center. In McCormick Place.
Yep.
And it's running and they're building stuff.
Like yeah. Power consumption alone.
Dude, there was so much weight on them floors. Like whenever like security would roll by on a Segway, the whole floor would shake. You're just like,
I kept visualizing
my God.
Like in the original Captain America movie when they make and they flip the switch and the whole power goes down.
Yep.
And that's because of Fabtech.
Yeah. No, honestly, yeah, the whole city because of Fabtech. I could see that.
I'm waiting for them to like 3D print humans that come out and talk to you and like, here's a 3D printing machine that just created me.
Yeah, it's on its way. Yeah. It really is.
Did
give it 10
the,
years.
You see the Trump 3D printers, the additive printers?
Yeah.
They had, I mean, these little tiny globes that would spin. They were still connected. Absolutely insane.
Uh-huh. I'm waiting for – I can't wait to get – so I've had those – arm surgeries, and I was joking with a friend I hadn't seen since college, and he's into medical research at Ohio State, and I was like, yeah, just tell me when you have like a mechanical arm, and he's like, actually, let me show you what my partner's working on. He sends me a video of this like articulating hand. I was like, oh, sign me up. He said, well, we're only doing amputees. I'm like, well, I'll cut my arm off. Just
I
let
mean,
me
whatever. I want something sweet
I don't
like
my
that.
Wife,
come on.
My wife won't be super happy with that, but I'm all about being a cyborg.
Hell yeah. Keep me working longer.
The attachments you can get for it.
Absolutely. Buzzsaw.
Buzzsaw.
Just cut through
go,
everything.
Go Gadget buzzsaw.
Yeah. Inspector Gadget.
Hell yeah.
It's going to be real.
Guys, I want to thank you so very much for taking the time to come down to my studio to talk to me and be on this episode. This is episode number 13. You guys are on kind of a landmark episode.
Awesome.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
So before I let you go, Aaron, please plug your social media and where everybody can find you and everything to do with Bulldog Welding.
At Bulldog Welding on Instagram. Shoot me an email. I usually respond to things. I send stickers out to anybody that sends me a request. So,
what's your email?
Just go on Instagram.
Oh, it's on there? Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
But yeah, no, thanks for having me. I
hey, anytime, it. Man. Anytime. Josh, please plug your stuff too.
BrownDogWelding.com is my website. We're going to revamp it here in about a month or so. I've had it for like a decade now, so it's crazy that
dude,
it's been
mine
that
needs
long.
It bad. Like you go to mine, it's a show description and a button to click for listen. Like,
but that's what we've gotten to though. It's all social media.
Yeah, really.
But if you can do something to stand out, and that's what I'm hoping to do. I think the new site's gonna be really cool. Welder Assassin on Instagram, Brown Dog Welding on Instagram. I'm starting to pay more attention to that account. It's more like my final work. Twitter at Brown Dog Welding, Facebook Brown Dog Welding, or Josh Walton. If your friend requests me, I'll be your friend on Facebook.
I got to give you props though, because on your Welder Assassin account, you've got some 45,000 followers, and you're following no one. The only person, only two people I've known to get away with that is Eminem and Dean Ambrose before he just got into this new thing with the Shield on WWE. So that's pretty
thing.
Good.
There's a story behind that.
Nobody.
There's a story behind that. We'll have to talk about sometime.
All right, but, sounds good, man.
All right, that's it for this week. Thank you so very much for listening. Remember, if you are an Apple iTunes listener, please subscribe. That way you never miss an episode. And while you subscribe, make sure you leave a review because your reviews help this show reach more people. iTunes reviews are still the number one currency of podcasts, so the more, the merrier. Thank you so very much for all your support so far. If you like what I'm doing or don't like what I'm doing, you can email the show at arcjunkies@gmail.com. I would definitely love to hear from you and get your feedback. And until next week, ladies and gentlemen, stay safe and weld hard.